guy I started working with there for a long time.
Good afternoon, everyone. For those of you who aren't consistently sitting at a dais like this, I want you to know when the blue light's on, you're being recorded. The cameras are on, and the public is welcome to join us as long as the blue light is on. Welcome. I am Catty McEwen. I am happy to open this, officially open, this Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish. I represent House District 9 down on the South Coast. Welcome, Senator. The gavel just came down.
I just heard it out in the hall as I was waddling as fast as I could.
You haven't missed a thing. There you go. This bill passed in the last session, House Bill 2209, forming this task force. I'm delighted to be a participant in this, and I greatly appreciate all of your willingness to join us and look at what we can do to help support this incredible industry that we have in Oregon regarding shellfish. We have an order of business today. You have an agenda before you. Two things we need to do that are part of the organization of this task force. One is the election of a chair and the adoption of the task force rules. So I would look to you for nominations for electing a chair.
Madam Chair, let's just, Madam Interim Chair, let's just ask for a second what the obligations are going to be. They'll be putting together. I'm just trying to figure out how much staffing it's going to take.
We are fortunate to have Ms. Petrino staffing us today.
Okay. But is the expectation of the chair to simply be the convener, or is the chair going to be out rustling up program? What will be the obligation of the chair?
I'm looking to Beth. I am going to assume that it is more convening than it is organizational.
Madam Chair, members of the task force, for the record, Beth Petrino with Committee Services. I believe that's correct. I think the chair can take as active a role as they would like to, but my expectation would be that they would work with me to set the agendas for the meetings. I mean, the chair would set the agenda with the work of the task force in terms of the development of the work plan that you come up with, and then whatever role the chair would like to play in terms of how active he or she is fine. So it really varies with these task forces quite a bit.
Okay, thank you. That was helpful.
Seeing no formal nominations, I would be happy to volunteer to chair this committee, should the committee be so amenable.
Madam Chair, I would move that Representative McEwen act as the chair for the Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish, following the dictates of House Bill 2209.
I believe we need a second.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded that Representative McEwen chair this committee. All those in favor say aye.
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 Any objections? The motion carries. Thank you all. I'm delighted to do so. We do need to adopt rules, and you do have before you, I believe, a copy of the Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish, House Bill 2209, Task Force Rules, and we will need a motion to adopt rules.
Madam Chair, for the purpose of discussion, I would move adoption of the rules as presented on the November 23rd meeting of the Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. It's been moved that we adopt the rules for the Joint Interim Task Force on Oregon Shellfish, House Bill 2209. Is there any objection?
Madam Chair, the only point that I would like to raise, and I'm just skimming these, having not had the opportunity to read them prior to walking into the room, I can't imagine that we're going to be doing anything that will result in a particularly adversarial outcome, but I want to make sure that the group agrees that there would be the opportunity for a minority report to be included in any record of deliberations, just to make sure that we've captured all the opinions around the table. Although I think, judging from my knowledge of many of the personalities here, we're all headed in the same direction, and that's to do what we can to help an iconic and very lucrative industry prevalent along our wonderful coast.
So I'm going to look to Ms. Petrino to ask if we need to formally amend these with a bullet number 10, or can we take the senator's comments as recorded, mm-hmm. and see that they are assumed as we move forward with these rules.
Madam Chair, I don't believe there's anything in these rules that would preclude you from adopting a minority report if that's what some members of the group would like to do.
Madam Chair, if we can get a sentiment of the group that we would accommodate a minority report, then I would dispense with the formality of including it in the rules, and I see heads going up and down.
And we do have that now. Intent is on record at this point, Senator.
Cool. Okay. Then I'm happy.
All right. Yes. Are there any objections? No. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. The rules are adopted. Thank you. Now, let's move into the meat of what we're trying to do today. What I'd like to do, first of all, since we have many, many fresh faces in the room today, which is delightful, is just to go around and let everybody take a moment to introduce yourself and the nexus that you have with this industry, and why you're here. And we'll start with
Madam Chair. Yes, ma'am. With the indulgence of the committee, may I excuse myself? I'm working on a constituent issue that
Certainly.
Has an element of crisis to it. I should
you
be back
excused.
In about 15 minutes.
Okay. We'll start down at this end of the dais.
Svein Weiss Hansen. I work out of Tillamook Bay for Pacific Seafood and manage the oyster operations in Tillamook Bay. We have operations in Coos Bay and Tillamook and California and Washington. I've been doing that for 7 years now and just kind of look forward to working with everybody here and kind of seeing what we can do to increase that. All are up and down the coast, and
Great.
Oregon's one of the, compared to the other coastal states, that still has opportunity and seeming kind of a willingness to grow the industry.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Dick Vanderschaff. I'm with the Nature Conservancy, and I'm the Associate Conservation Director for the Coast and Marine Program there. I've been working for the Nature Conservancy for 30 years now, and I've had the privilege of working in the Oregon coast for about a dozen years and focusing on estuary conservation there. And one of the tasks I took on nearly 10 years ago now was the restoration of native shellfish or native oysters in Neatarts Bay. Neatarts was one of the three bays in Oregon that formerly had native oysters in it, and the population there declined precipitously a number of years ago, and so we took it upon ourselves to initiate restoration there in cooperation with the local shellfish growers as well as the Whiskey Creek Hatchery. And over those 10 years been working on this restoration project, I got to understand the industry quite well, working closely with the hatchery, and really have appreciated and learned greatly and admired the work that the folks are doing there. So I'm interested in seeing native oysters restoration continue in our bays where they are appropriate, and also recognizing the importance of the habitat of estuaries in general.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Claire Thomas. I am from Tillamook, Oregon. I am the natural resource coordinator and science specialist, I guess, for the school district number 9, Tillamook School District number 9. I also work with the Coastal STEM Hub as one of the PD professional development directors for that STEM Hub. I have also a lot of interest in shellfish and in Neatarts Bay, and we've had in the years I've been at Lake Tillamook, about 10 years, we've had a lot of students going out and doing research on shellfish out there. We've had also worked with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and the program that looked at shellfish populations out there, and we now are conducting research that's looking at taking the numbers that we gained from our last population surveys, what are the changes in the sizes, masses of the shellfish out there, the makeup of the shellfish. So, a lot of interest. I represent on this group. I represent the recreational people.
Great, thank you. I appreciate your willingness to serve.
And I'm Gil Sylvia. I'm director of the Coastal Oregon Marine Experiment Station of Oregon State University. We have our labs both at the Half of the Marine Science Center, and we run the Astoria Seafood Lab. And we also house the Mollusk and Broodstock Program, which House Bill 2209 helps support. And my professional training is as a marine resource economist, and I've done a number of projects in aquaculture economics.
All right, thank you.
Sure.
And again, I'm Kathy McHugh, and I represent House District 9, which goes from the southern end of Coos Bay to the northern edge of Yahats. And just excited about this process and how we can assist this industry. And I want to, when we get around the corner to Cassina Lee, she was our Sea Grant Fellow who chaired the Coastal Caucus this year and kind of helped guide us to this and Gabriella Goldfarb from the Governor's Office, who helped actually work really hard on this bill to get the task force formed. So a number of you participated in that as well, but we've had great staff support in getting this together too. And I also want to, as we start out, introduce Beth Petrino. Beth is committee staff, and we're very fortunate to have her and her expertise in natural resource-based issues staffing this committee. So I want to make sure we acknowledge the staff's journey.
Hi, I'm Mike Sandin. I'm the general manager of the Port of Garibaldi. I've been there about a year and a half. Before that, I did 26 years with the Coast Guard before retiring, so bringing a little bit of a multi-port perspective to this, and I'm here kind of representing the ports as conduits for economic activity, and really excited to see how this all goes, because we know that a lot of the shellfish industry is truly a sustainable and proven sustainable industry, where some of them are still just in theory, so looking forward to seeing what we can do.
Great.
Steve Rumrell, I'm the shellfish program leader for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, based in Newport, and we have responsibility for management of the commercial and recreational harvest and fisheries for wild stock shellfish, for the clams, razor clams, for the crabs and shrimp, sea urchins, so that whole suite. I've been working, living on the Oregon coast for 25 years, 20 years down in Coos Bay, as the chief scientist for the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve. And in that capacity, we conducted original research on the ecological impacts, trying to identify best management practices for commercial mariculture of oysters in Pacific Northwest estuaries. So I've been working with the Coast Seafoods Group down in Humboldt Bay, with our colleagues in South Slough and Coos Bay, in Yaquina Bay, Tillamook Bay, also up in British Columbia and in Puget Sound as well. My academic background is as an invertebrate zoologist, as a shellfish biologist, fisheries biologist, so I'm really looking forward to trying to make some progress on this issue here in Oregon.
Thank you.
I'm Jess Hample, been an oyster farmer for 20 years in the South Slough and in Coos Bay, and just want to help out with everything I can.
Happy to have you here. Thank you. I know it's a trek. I'll be home about 8:30.
Yeah, my name is Frank Barcelos, and I'm with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. I've worked 39 years in food safety, and I haven't had that much experience in the shellfish side of that, just basically food safety and dealing with our partners with the FDA and USDA and other operations like that that we deal with on a regular basis in the state. My training is as a microbiologist, and I've been in the last 3 years working with the various aspects of our food safety program here in the state of Oregon, and working with many talented people. Brought Mr. Alex Manderson with us today. I'm sure all of you are very aware of who Alex is. He's one of our more dedicated employees that has put a lot of time and effort into this program and has quite a good relationship, we feel, with everyone, I hope, here and throughout the coastline. So I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here and to be a part of this task force.
Great. We appreciate your participation. This may be a big learning curve.
It's been a big learning curve.
Thank you. We may as well, we have a small group here. Let's just go around. These are all interested parties.
Good afternoon. I have the pleasure of speaking with all of you in the course of the appointment process. I'm Gabriella Goldfarb, a natural resources policy advisor to Governor Brown, and I have in my portfolio all ocean and coastal issues and others that sometimes cross over in terms of land quality toxics, those types of issues as well. So very happy to be here and listen to the good work that you'll be doing, and it's been great working with Rhett McEwen throughout this process, and with Cassina, who as of November 1 came over to become a policy fellow.
She stole her
policy fellow in the governor's office. It's a great compliment to, you know, she brings the great experience that she had with the Coastal Caucus during legislative session. So we will have her through pretty much most of the short session as well. So I see us on this effort certainly as, in most cases, all on the same team, and glad that Casita can continue to see through, as a great experience for her as a Sea Grant Fellow, really see through this whole process from the legislative inception all the way to the implementation. So I'm very grateful to have her on board and think she'll be a great boon to this group. So thanks.
Well, we're delighted that you were able to provide this opportunity. So thank you. Ms. Lee?
Should I introduce myself? I'm Cassina Lee. So I was the 2015 Legislative Fellow staffing the Coastal Caucus. Rhett McEwen likes to promote me and say I chaired the Coastal Caucus, and I don't usually correct her. And now I'm, as Gabriella said, a Sea Grant Fellow in the Governor's Office. My background, conservation biology and ecology, my research has looked at that through the lens of marine mammals, specifically pinnipeds, but interested in all of the coastal impacts that we're seeing, and I'm just really excited to get to see this project a little further down the road. So looking forward to participating or cheering on from the sidelines.
I'm Alex Manderson. I'm with Frank in the Department of Agriculture. I'm the shellfish specialist with the Food Safety and Animal Health Program. And so I oversee the commercial shellfish industry in the state. Also have involvement with the recreational shellfish side of things as well, and I've also been involved with the aquaculture committees, and so I'm excited to be part of this group.
Thank you. And you wear many hats.
Yeah.
We're happy to have you
it's
here.
It's a small industry, but it's a vital one, and I think that's why we're here.
And I've introduced Beth, and you have some of your staff with you.
I'll let Dan Roper introduce himself, but he's working with the Committee Services Office for some period of time, actually on a temporary basis right now. But
And I believe, Dan, I've seen you in our Ag and Natural Resources Committee on occasion. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was a grad student at OSU right now. I was an intern with Committee Services during the previous legislative session, and now I'm back on a part-time basis, and I'll be working with Beth to support the work of the task force.
Great. We're happy to have you on board. And Mr. Rollator?
I'm Joe Rollator. I'm a commissioner on the Port of Alsea, which is a port that surrounds Walport, which is right in the middle of the Oregon coast, if anybody knows that. My other commissioners asked me to attend these meetings and report back to them, because we're very interested in developing shellfish industry in our area.
Well, you're a lonely man today, sir, because I don't think there's anyone else in the building besides this committee and you.
So.
Well, we're happy to have you here, as always.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the organizational meeting and open an informational meeting. We have four items on our informational meeting today, and we're going to start out with the background of the Oregon Shellfish Initiative, and I would like to welcome to the dais Cassina Lee, Sea Grant Fellow, and I believe, Mr. Manderson, you're welcome to stay if you'd like, and Gabrielle, if you'd like to join her as well, you're welcome to, or wherever you, if you want to stay there, that's fine. But. Senator, you've just missed introductions, and we're just beginning our first informational hearing. So.
Oh. Is that visible?
Perfect timing.
Okay. I'm trying to get her under the second.
Good.
And we'll need an introduction.
Introduction from the record. So members of the task force, Cassina Lee, Oregon Sea Grant Fellow, currently with the Governor's Office of Natural Resource Policy. So what I've got here is just some background on the Shellfish Initiative, which will be old news to some of you who've been with this process from the beginning. Pieces of it might be new to some of you. Some of you can probably correct me on some of this information, because I've been with this for just about a year. So the first thing I want to do is just acknowledge the Oregon Legislative Assembly Coastal Caucus, who really carried the water on this in the legislative session, chose to take it up legislatively, which hasn't been done in our neighboring states. So it was a slightly different approach, but they
put their weight behind.
Sorry to blow out of the room and then come back in and immediately have a question.
Sure.
When you said it hasn't been done in our neighboring states, my recollection of our whole conversation about this had to do with the fact that Washington has a very robust effort, and we were trying to replicate or pilfer from or whatever.
Right. So what I mean was that they took it up through recommendations of a blue ribbon panel. So I believe this is the first Western state that has gone through the Legislative Assembly to create their shellfish initiative.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to acknowledge that.
There's been no funding that I know of from the states.
Yeah, but just that we took it up through the legislature as just a novel mechanism on the West Coast. So some quick background. There are 7 estuaries in Oregon where oysters are grown commercially, and then the Clatsop beaches are certified for razor clam harvest. The official ODA estimate of the industry value has been about $3 million a year, but we know that that's low due to we just haven't had complete reporting data in previous years. So experts put the value between $10 to $20 million. I've heard 12 and seen that in an ODA report as an estimate, with the potential to possibly double that. So what I thought I would do is kind of look at this 10-year window from 2007 to 2017, which kind of takes us past the major mileposts that have gotten us here. So we'll start in the 2007 to 2009. There we go. So the Whiskey Creek Shellfish Hatchery started noticing some larvae die-off in about 2007. Similar issues had been seen in Chris Langdon's Molluscan Broodstock Program Lab as early as 2005, as well as in some private hatcheries and some areas in Washington. So ultimately, these issues were correlated with acidified seawater without, you know, getting into too much detail there. But just that acidification of the water was impacting the larva at a certain stage. So fortunately, we have some of the best chemical oceanographers in the world at Hatfield Marine Science Center. And so working with Burke Hales and Chris Langdon and I believe George Waldbesser, they were able to install this monitoring equipment at Whiskey Creek, which would give them information about the chemistry of the water at certain times and when they might need to add something to the water to augment or to offset those acidifying effects on the larvae broodstock. So that partnership started in that 2007 to 2009 time period. And then going forward to 2011 was when we had the National and the Washington State Shellfish Initiatives. So the National Shellfish Initiative kind of laid out these 4 objectives to focus on marine spatial planning and clarifying the permitting process, as well as doing environmental research, improving farming techniques, and looking at ways to for public and private partnerships to be formed to support the industry and to support research. The Washington Shellfish Initiative had kind of some similar. Yeah.
Senator? When you say the innovative financing, both for research and development and industry support, I hope that as we work through this, we can see a little bit broader discussion of what exactly that means. The R&D piece, I understand. That would probably be in conjunction with an academic institution.
Right.
But the industry support, I'm curious about.
Yeah, and we will have Laura Hobrecht from NOAA. She's the head of the West Coast region, the aquaculture program, and she'll be available by phone for future meetings to kind of help give that perspective of what they've been able to do.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then again, the Washington Shellfish Initiative. So again, public-private partnerships, whether that's for funding, research involving industry, and then again, a focus on promoting and restoring native shellfish and ensuring good water quality, because of course they have much larger population centers sharing space with commercial oysters. Another thing that happened in 2011 is that the congressional earmarks that had been funding that Molluscan broodstock program at Hatfield Marine Science Center, those earmarks went away. So that program was able to kind of limp along through 2012 with residual funding. And then in 2013, the legislature appropriated funds to Whiskey Creek for another biennium. And I believe Senator Johnson has a story about following then-Governor Goolengoski
into a men's room at some point to get funding for whiskey.
I chased him into the gentleman's room. It was existential for Whiskey Creek, and I made it existential for Governor Kulongowski.
Excellent. So,
the legend lives on.
Excellent history of this program. I was hoping you'd back me up with that instead of denying it.
Guilty as charged.
I appreciate that. So in 2013, the legislature did find some funding for Whiskey Creek and the Moluscan Broodstock Program, but not a sustainable funding source at that time. So just a quick look at 2012. So I'm sure some of you were in on this conversation. That was, I think, when discussion of an Oregon Shellfish Initiative kind of began in earnest. And so there was a meeting put on by the Pacific Coast Shellfish Growers Association and some discussion about patterning an Oregon Shellfish Initiative after what Washington was doing, with sort of the broad goals of promoting sustainable shellfish farming. Why? Sorry. My field seems to advance PowerPoint slides. It's not the first time this has happened to me. But facilitating the economic benefits to the industry and then, again, focusing on the ecological health of the estuaries. So in 2013, then we had the California Shellfish Initiative, which, again, so looking at creating dialogue between industry and environmental and agency folks, stakeholder-driven planning, community-driven in the estuaries where they have major shellfish industry presence. And then they've done a lot with using technology to sort of help get people through the permitting process in an easier way. They've got this GEO portal that really kind of walks people through some first steps. So they've done a lot with that. Also in 2013, the Oregon Department of Agriculture was tasked with developing an Oregon Aquaculture Development Plan. Essentially policy around aquaculture in freshwater, brackish water, and saltwater. So the Aquaculture Advisory Group was formed. There are four subgroups within that, and the shellfish subgroup essentially was the work group or became the work group that worked on this legislation. So there haven't been two parallel efforts going on. It's been one effort. And so out of the advisory group's efforts, Dr. John Moll created this document to kind of the state of aquaculture in Oregon and some guidelines for permitting for potential new ventures. And so I just wanted to mention that because that might be a reference that would be useful to the task force. So 2014, I think, was this meeting hosted by the Coastal Caucus and the PCSGA, where I think it was decided to take up this matter in the legislative session. And in 2015, these are the folks that were the work group for House Bill 2209, so several people who are in the room today. Some of these folks are available to be resources to either come to meetings or phone in, so Laura Hobrecht with NOAA, DLCD, I know some other, if there are other agencies that you need for one or two meetings, those folks will be available.
Senator.
Out of this resource list, private industry seems conspicuously missing. And I think as we move forward, making ample opportunity to have industry at the table is critically important.
And I think, Senator, the makeup of the committee reflects that nicely. If you, yeah.
Right, but I'm thinking about in terms of, you said that there would be resources off of this list to come in and talk to us. I want to make sure that we get the troops in here.
Yes.
That's a good point, but I need to point out that Margaret Barrett and Peter Moore, representing the Pacific Shellfish Growers Association, were very active, and they're a voice of many, many growers.
And I just realized I left one thing out during the instructions. I actually serve on the board of directors for PCSGA as the vice president as well.
Great.
It's a big deal.
And Margaret and Peter, I know, are available to us
absolutely.
At such time that we need to call on them. Yeah. They
yeah.
will be great resources.
Absolutely.
Please continue.
So thank you. Just a quick overview of House Bill 2209. Because I know we're going to review the bill and the task force in more detail. So that established essentially the policy of the state of Oregon to support the shellfish industry while conserving and protecting wild populations of shellfish. So there are a couple of, there's a policy component and a couple of appropriations in the bill. One of the policy pieces, I mentioned earlier that we know that our estimates of the oyster industry in Oregon have been low due to incomplete reporting requirements, and so the statute was updated so that everyone cultivating oysters, whether on private or public land, will file production reports annually with the Department of Ag, and that just comes in line with the federal regulation from USDA. And that information, individual records can be kept confidential, but it can be released as aggregate numbers. So we updated that in statute. And then we had these appropriations. So $125,000 to the Department of Ag for a two-year pilot project aimed at decreasing closure times in the Tillamook Bay estuary for harvest to see if that can make a difference. And Alex put together that program and those numbers, so we were able to do that.
And I understand that has been implemented.
Has that been?
It's ongoing.
It's ongoing.
It's begun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And then $500,000 to OSU for the Molluscan broodstock and the continued monitoring at Whiskey Creek Hatchery to study the impacts of ocean acidification. And so, as you know, this is the composition of the task force as laid out in House Bill 2209. And then the charges of the task force, which again we'll be getting into in more detail. But to support collaboration between commercial and recreational industry agencies and research science, to determine a state agency to take the lead for regulating shellfish production, and then priorities for research and funding related to production, best management practices, ocean acidification and hypoxia research, social and economic vulnerability of coastal communities, water quality and monitoring, and continuing to assess and protect wild shellfish stocks. So that brings us to the present, 2016 and 2017, with the task force. And this talk was prepared for audiences who didn't know your work plan, so I think you know that you are meeting and providing recommendations to the legislature next year. So that's the lovely Neatarts Bay.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you, Cassina. Any questions for Ms. Lee? Next on our agenda for our informational hearing is information on shellfish harvest and bay certification, the current status and issues that we face. And Dr. Rumrill, thank you for coming around the dais and joining us on the other side.
Thanks for the opportunity.
You've been there before, I'll bet.
Absolutely.
Members of the task force, for the record, I'm Steve Rumrill with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, Shellfish Program Leader. Cassina asked me to just give you a real quick overview of shellfish in Oregon. So I'm going to deal with the wild stock that ODFW manages, as well as some comments about the responsibilities for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. So there's a quick title, Commercial and Recreational Shellfish, or Bivalve Shellfish. Bay certification, restoration, some other issues. First of all, from the wild stock, we have a very large diversity of clams, bay clams here in Oregon. We're familiar with gaper clams, cockles, butter clams, native little neck clams. These are really popular targets for both sport harvest and recreational harvests. We also have razor clams in our state, and razor clams are really a very important recreational and commercial target species here in Oregon. Our department, our agency's records go back to 1955, so what I'm showing you here are the records of total harvest, commercial and recreational, and you can see it's up and down. There are good years and bad years. Those of you who are razor clam clammers know that some years are great, others are not so great. When I took this job, people put pressure on me saying, bring back the razor clams. Make sure razor clams are going well. I don't know how to do that given this. So it's like the Dungeness crab fishery.
Are those baby razor clams?
So what I'm showing you on the right, you can see those three points here where the seasons are closed due to biotoxins, and we're experiencing a major harmful algal bloom domoic acid issue that has closed the razor clam fishery in Coos Bay for well over a year. and up on the north coast in the Clatsop beaches since May of this year. This is really important for us. We're losing lots of money. Lots of clams are not being harvested. And so what those are, that's the diatom that creates, that's the phytoplankton cell that creates the domoic acid. That's the food that's sucked into the siphon of a razor clam, and it gets into the body that way. So thanks for asking me for clarification there. Anyways, I wanted to point out that the wild stocks of razor clams are an important component of the shellfish fisheries, recreational and commercial in Oregon.
Senator Johnson.
Doctor, a question for you. Whiskey Creek had at one point in time been trying to create more razor clam larvae. Is there the same antagonism in the shellfish world towards hatchery versus wild, and is there the possibility that we could reintroduce a more robust hatchery razor clam, or what are the other factors that would...
It's a complicated question and a great question. There's great interest in the commercial industry hatcheries here in Oregon as well as up in Puget Sound, I don't know about California, in cultivating razor clams. They're notoriously difficult to raise. They have been raised through metamorphosis. British Columbia, they've also raised them, but they're technically very difficult and very expensive to raise up to a harvestable size. Second part of your question was, is there the antagonism between wild stocks and genetically reared? I have not heard that for razor clams yet.
I hadn't either, but yeah. I just didn't. I mean, you say hatchery fish, and some people crawl up the wall. And
there's also, if I can add to it, there's also great interest in a cooperative venture between Oregon and Washington for looking at the impacts of ocean acidification on razor clams. They're right out in the surf zone, just past the waves, down into the subtidal zone, and very soft-shelled. Some folks think that they might be very susceptible at the pelagic drifting larval stage to ocean acidification. Others feel that because they're in the surf zone and there's a lot of aeration, that the carbon dioxide in the water may not be a problem for them. I think it would be very interesting for us to collaborate with Washington, because it's a huge industry on the outer coast of Washington and a very big industry for us in the northern part of the state.
Madam Chair, it's thoughts like that that I want to capture someplace, and I don't know whether Ms. Petrino will be getting those or whether...
We have a thumbs up.
Good. Okay.
I have another one, then, if she's taking notes real quick.
Yes,
maybe you can answer. If I remember right, Mark at Whiskey Creek told me that he is not allowed to sell Manila clam seed in Oregon for commercial use because the farming of it is not allowed.
I don't know that. We'll have to explore that with the Department of Ag here. Yeah. Okay,
That allows and this may be a question for another time, yeah. But I have been asked on numerous occasions about commercially raising gooey ducks in this state. And I know there are some barriers to that, and I don't know why, and that's another question I'd like to have on the list for Ms. Petrino.
I can address that at one point. We do have gooey ducks in the state, very, very low numbers. The confirmed numbers of gooey ducks brought in by commercial divers and recreational harvesters out of Willapa Bay and down in Coos Bay have been very low over the past decade. Most of them are gooey duck or gaper clams. So they do occur here, but my feeling is they're further offshore and outside. They're very popular, very lucrative industry in Puget Sound in deep water, but we just don't have that kind of habitat, that fjord-carved, you know, deep water habitat in Oregon.
Thank you.
There's very salinity needy too, and a lot of our estuaries don't have the salinity required for them.
Okay, to continue on our wild stock, we also have native oysters that Dick Vandershaft talked about, our native Olympia oysters, which used to be very abundant and were a very important component of the economic fishery in the past. Their numbers declined to the point now where Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife does not allow sport harvest of the recovering populations of Olympia oysters. In the event that they recovered to that point where we would allow them, it's possible that could occur, but at this point their numbers are very low. And of course on the rocky intertidal, other molluscan shellfish, the California mussels, very abundant as well, and are sometimes harvested for sport purposes. Our management of these bay clam harvests, so we manage the recreational harvest by issuing sport licenses. We establish daily catch limits. My staff conducts creel interviews with clammers out on the tide flats, counts the numbers of clammers out there, uses this information to estimate the catch per unit effort to find out how easy or difficult it is. On the commercial side, there's an intertidal rake fishery, folks harvesting clams from the intertidal zone. It's also a dive fishery of scuba-based operators. And we issue commercial permits, fishing licenses, keep track of their landings. We establish the quotas, the annual landing quotas, designate which species, even designate which sizes of animals, and set really the harvest take by examining the logbooks. That's the way that we manage the fishery to make sure that that it's sustainable now and into the future.
Yep. Question. Ask a question.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So the commercial bay clams, where are they marketed?
Yeah. So can I get to that?
Oh, here? Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. It'll be a couple slides, but
okay.
The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife Shellfish Program also has a stock assessment team. So the information that I shared with you before is fisheries-dependent information that we get from the sport harvesters or from the commercial harvesters. But we've also got four dedicated individuals who work as part of our SECOR team, and that's the Shellfish and Estuarine Assessment of Coastal Oregon. Their job is to do the stock assessments, to go on out independently and figure out how many clams are in the different bays, where are they distributed, what are their size ranges and densities. They also map estuarine habitat. That's very important for us to have that information when we get a lease, plat lease. So we use this information to evaluate the locations for proposed commercial mariculture operation. And overall, it's their job to do long-term monitoring to make sure that we don't allow too much harvest and we allow harvest at a level that's going to be sustainable. Yes, sir.
You know, I know we're talking about shellfish here, but
yeah.
Clearly there's a commercial harvest for mud shrimp, and I wonder if we should be thinking of at least recognizing that or even including it. They, of course, occur in estuaries. They are a significant harvest, certainly in Elsie Bay and other and a few other places. Something we should may want to think about adding to our already long list of species to
yes,
be
if
concerned
I can,
with.
If I can add to that, so the burrowing shrimp are our shellfish, as are crab. The task force in the deliberation that brought us to this point had that discussion, and we decided to limit this to mollusks at this point before when we were forming up the bill. But it's an excellent point. We certainly can talk about that from the research side, but that's my understanding that we're dealing with mollusks.
We did limit the task force direction, but it doesn't mean it isn't a conversation
yes.
we can't
right.
have
okay.
as a coastal caucus, or if there are issues that we need to address, please feel free to let us know and we can have a sidebar.
Okay. Just a quick show here. So on the left is Neatarts Bay, on the right is Tillamook Bay. Each dot is a location where my team has physically gone and assessed the habitat, dug up the clams, and characterized it. So they're very comprehensive. It takes 2 years to get through these sites. So we develop a very solid understanding of the shellfish resources in the intertidal zone as well as in the subtidal zone in the bays. We have information now for Yaquina Bay, for Neatarts Bay, Tillamook Bay, and over the next couple of years we'll be working in Coos Bay. Our charge is to do this for all of the Oregon bays and estuaries, but it's going to take us a long time to get to all of those. As I've managed my staff, I'm trying to streamline this operation. Out of these 2,000 data points, there's a subset of 20 that would give us the same information, but I don't know which 20 points. So we're working to streamline that information and see if I can speed them up. Yep.
Please, Mr. Sonia.
Is the assessments done just by your staff, or do you include industry or recreational anglers in estimating stocks?
All of this data is done just with our staff, with those four individuals from ODFW.
Okay, so you're not doing like collaborative research with either the rec or commercial sector?
Not for this stock.
Not for this,
assessment.
Okay.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Thank you.
Senator Johnson.
Is there some impediment to doing that? Because it seems to me the data is more important than who does it.
No, so we have collaborative research going on with Oregon State University, with University of Oregon, but those are specific research problems. We don't engage them in our stock assessment. We certainly could. I think if we could pull some outside funding to engage them in that part. But the same people that are working on this under the direction of Dr. Tony D'Andrea are doing work looking at some of the nuances of the eelgrass beds or the statistical links between certain species and attributes of habitats, but they're not involved in the day-to-day mundane stock assessment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to flag that and have the professional staff catch it, because it seems to me that the grinding noise that's occurring now and will be occurring more has to do with some of these issues, like the proliferation of eelgrass and the issuance of permits and what stocks are there and what areas are closed. And absent the objective data to make those decisions, they seem capricious and not driven by good science. And so I'd like to eventually to get, before we conclude our work, to get some sense of how much it would cost to get additional staff, to get the work done. Could you collaborate? What impediments are there to forming relationships with OSU or industry or somebody else to go out and count this? I'd like to get the data, and I just don't think the urgency of ocean conditions allows us a lot of time to wait.
Okay, thank you very much.
So just to comment on with that program, Tillamook School District and the Tillamook Bay Community College has been involved with Tony D'Andrea, and with his team has gone out quite often into Tillamook Bay and into Neatarts Bay and has accompanied them on these trips, and then following their protocols have kind of carried on some of our own work that is a little different piece of it, but it's similar. So there is a really good public piece to this, at least in the Tillamook area, where this is high interest and a lot of people know about it and a lot of people participate in some of these activities.
Yeah, thanks, Claire. And I think that's an example of the collaborative kind of research that's going on. But again, we don't use your data in the actual stock assessment to set quotas for the commercial harvest.
Well, how long would you say those stock assessments are good for? I mean, if it's taking, you know, 2 years to do this one, 2 years to do this one, 2 years to do this one, by the time we get to Coos Bay, the Tillamook Bay ones may not even be valid
anymore. Yeah, that's an
excellent
point, right? And that's part of my job is to speed this up.
Yeah.
I would venture that they're probably good for about 5 years with the slow growth of clams. And we're moving with data. The last time this was done was about 1970s. So it's been a long time since.
And I know you guys are busting your butt to do it. I think it would be great if we could use that cooperative effort to try to get a singular snapshot of the whole coast within a two-year period at the same time.
We're also, while we're talking about this, I'm also exploring other things like the drones, UAVs that I can fly out over the tide flat instead of having to send people out. So we do have grant support that I just got for that as well.
And I want to apologize. We had hoped to hold this meeting up in room 350, which would have put us all around a table, which would have been much more conversational. Unfortunately, we had some technical issues up there, and we were moved down here because of some recording equipment. So hopefully next time we'll be in a little more conversation-friendly environment.
Sure.
But Dr. Romero, please continue.
I'll just keep running through here. So we have information on the recreational bay clam harvests for the bays. As you can see here, for Tillamook and Neatarts, about steady landings in both bays over the past 7 or 8 years or so. And now switching over to the commercial side and to get to the question that Dr. Sylvia asked me earlier. From the commercial side, the target species are primarily cockles, paper clams, and butter clams. And the primary market is selling these clams for bait, for Dungeness crab bait. So that's the majority of the harvest goes for bait. And human consumption is a very small part of that market. We've certainly heard from the commercial harvesters that they would like to change this around. They view that enhancement of the human consumption market would certainly help the bottom line, would draw a larger price.
Senator?
Are these exportable? I'm differentiating towards an Asian market that might come after these clams for human consumption as opposed to some of our iconic crustacea, which first of all doesn't travel very well, and secondly, we don't want to run the price up by creating a global market for it, more so than there is now. But is it just an underdeveloped market, or is it a regulatory, or is it taste and flavor? And
it's not a regulatory problem at this point. So we've spoken to the commercial harvesters, and they are certainly welcome to develop whatever markets they would like. Gil knows this as well. And it's also our understanding that there is an Asian market for the gaper clam meat at this point, but they just need some help. And again, it's nice to have Gil's expertise here to try to let the clam harvesters figure out how to develop these human consumption markets.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'll rest on you, Gil.
There you go.
Yes, on your shoulder. I want to contrast that steady harvest for the recreational side of Tillamook and Neatarts here with the commercial bay landings. So up in the red graph up on the top shows Tillamook Bay. 1994 was a high year, dropping down mid-90s, a high year in about 2003, dropped down, and then since about 2005, there's been a very steady increase in the total harvest of bay clams out of Tillamook Bay. Neatarts Bay down in the green, very low, up until about 2009, peak in about 2010, and then from 2013 to 2015, also another peak there. And then steady and low in Coos Bay. Those are the prime three locations for commercial harvest of clams in Oregon, Tillamook Bay, Neatarts Bay, and Coos Bay. Just blowing up, magnifying the recent history of cockle harvest in Neatarts Bay here across the bottom, you can see here from 2008 to 2015, the commercial harvest in red, there was nothing up till 2010, and then it peaked up around 30,000 pounds, dropped way low down to 2012 and 2013, but in 2014 and 2015, very high numbers, up over about 40 to 50,000 pounds. And this caused concern up there. Senator Johnson, you were involved in that. The Tillamook County Commissioners asked us to look into this as well. And since that time, we've taken proposals to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and the commission approved setting a cap at about 22,000 pounds for a sustainable harvest. So it's that kind of information and volatility that comes to me, and we work with the commission to set some limits. So that sharp increase hopefully has been
dealt with. So the sharp increase was due to much higher effort?
Yes, and in particular, those were harvesters, commercial harvesters from Puget Sound, from Anacortes and Bellingham. We do have reciprocity across the border. So a couple of groups came down and found that it was easy to harvest there, lucrative, and that's what happened. Okay, switching from that wild stock, so that's wild stock shellfish harvest. Commercial mariculture of oysters and clams takes place here in Oregon. I'll just touch on a few things. Primary is the Pacific oyster. That's a non-native species from Japan that grows very well and fast and is really the bread and butter oyster grown by most growers here, not only in Oregon, but Washington, California, and throughout the world. Here in Oregon, we also have Kumamoto oysters grown as well, and in a couple of cases, our native Olympia oysters are also cultivated for commercial purposes. And we also do have Manila clam populations going as well.
Is there commercial Manila clam farming? That was kind of leading into my question earlier.
It's my understanding that we have populations that are harvested and in Neatarts. Is that correct, Alex, you think?
No? I'm not aware of any Manila clam.
We had plantings that have persisted, right? I mean, there are Manila clams out in Tillamook Bay and Neatarts Bay, but I'm not sure. That's why I'm looking to Alex
from Mark there. What I got was he's not allowed to sell his seed in Oregon, and ODA does have ground permitted in Tillamook, but the gentleman who owns it was unable to plant it because there is a rule in effect that they call it a non-native species. So he was not allowed to commercially raise.
Well, let's look into that and clarify that situation.
I've heard the same thing from Whiskey Creek Shellfish.
Yeah. Is that something that we would like to put on our check it out list?
Yeah.
That's status of Manila.
Non-native, not invasive.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering where the law is for that. I'm wondering if it's under invasive species.
My understanding, it was something from a salmon commission got involved, and it was some kind of ruling on it. But it's not a state law. It was some kind of I can't remember the word for it now that Mark told me. We can look into it, see if we can find it.
Yeah, and I've heard the same thing to collaborate, so.
I'm not
to
this
corroborate,
crazy.
I guess. So yeah, he's definitely. I've heard the same thing from Mark, also. Okay.
Thank you.
Casina showed us this map. So this is the ODA map showing the areas where commercial shellfish harvest and growers harvest for human consumption. That's limited to these eight areas. And just to repeat real quick, so Clatsop Beaches are approved for harvest for human consumption. Tillamook, Neatarts, Equina Bay, the Umpqua Triangle, that weird spot out at the mouth of Umpqua, mm-hmm. and the Umpqua Estuary, and then two spots in Coos Bay and also a special spot up in South Slough. Those are the permitted areas by by ODA at this point.
Dr. Romero, is there anything south of Coos Bay that could be permitted, or is the geology just not welcoming to this type of?
Well, there are small parts of the Coquille Estuary that it may be possible. A very small part of the Rogue system might be possible. That's primarily freshwater all the way through. And same thing with the Chetco as a major estuary down there. Also very small. Those are very steep watersheds with lots and lots of fresh water. So of those locations, probably the mouth of the Coquille would be it.
Thanks.
Yep. So I have a question about Waldport, not on there?
Waldport is not on there. Alsea Bay is not on that list.
Yep. And I think that has come up as a topic of conversation prior. Is there
right.
opportunity there or is there not? And I think it's something that this task force needs to take a look at. So right. we'll put that on our list.
Yep.
Madam Chair, the ODA had both of those particular bays classified at one point in time, the Coquille and
Alsea.
Yeah, but they've dropped off
with
the lack of interest in focusing up limited funds on bigger industry.
Thank you.
I brought this map up just to show, even though we talk about bays being approved, but there are specific locations within bays that are approved. Not whole bays are approved. So just the example here for Tillamook, the area in the north part, the marine-dominated and mesohaline or mixing zone is conditionally approved at this point, but the upper part of Tillamook Bay is not approved. And again, Department of Ag will have to correct me, but I think that that's based on the results of the most recent shoreline septic survey, monitoring of water quality parameters, and also fecal indicator bacteria. And in the estuaries, that's both E. coli and Enterococcus bacteria in those areas. So that's kind of what it takes to keep those areas open. Lots of different techniques for the commercial mariculture of oysters in Oregon. At the simplest, bottom culture, where the oysters are simply cultivated right on the soft substratum. They can also be cultured on stakes, so individual stakes with clusters of oysters, on racks where there's a type of table or some kind of rack with oysters suspended from it. Others grown on rack and bag type culture, on suspended long line culture, almost like vineyards, on ropes that are stretched horizontally, and then also buoy lines, like in the Umpqua Triangle, where there are buoys that have oysters come down. So when we talk about oyster culture, the type of culture is important in terms of figuring out what those the economic value, the harvest techniques, where it's appropriate. That. Here in the Northwest in Oregon, we have a long history of research, of collaborative research between the agencies and academia to look at these ecological impacts of the various growing techniques and also to try to identify best management practices to minimize the ecological impacts. And I just put up a batch of them here. I mentioned in my introduction in my time at South Slough Reserve, I worked on this starting way back in 1995. And we've done work in Humboldt Bay and Tillamook Bay throughout the Northwest, Willapa Bay. So this is really just a spattering, I would say probably a third of the technical resources that are available for the committee to work with in dealing with ecological impacts. I'd be happy to supply that information. Speaking of introductions, Dick Vandershaff mentioned in his introduction that he's worked on restoration of native Olympia oysters. I just wanted to highlight that here. So in collaboration between NOAA, the TNC, and the Whiskey Creek Hatchery, Dick and his colleagues have taken that on, trying to bring back the native Olympia oysters in Neatarts Bay. Down in Coos Bay, the Oregon Department of State Lands, which manages the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve, worked in collaboration also with the Whiskey Creek Hatchery and NOAA to establish a small native Olympia oyster population in South Slough. And then now Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is also working in collaboration with the University of Oregon, Oregon Institute of Marine Biology, to conduct the research needed to start up oyster restoration in parts of Coos Bay as well. So we've got a spattering of work going on the specific topic up and down the coast. So to just finish off, I think my jump-off perspective in starting work with the task force here are these three statements. Harvest of wild stock and cultivated shellfish are both very important components of shellfish here in Oregon. I believe that the Oregon Shellfish Initiative can provide us with an avenue to improve sport and commercial harvests, to improve mariculture operations, and also restoration activities as the major parts that we've identified in House Bill 2209. And then this third point, that public ownership of our submerged and submersible lands here in Oregon presents us with a special challenge to ensure fair and equitable use among our diverse shellfish stakeholders. We can learn a lot from what has gone on in Washington, but we also need to keep in mind that much of the tidelands is privately owned in Puget Sound, and so they've had different kinds of challenges. When we work here in Oregon, we have public ownership and have gone through a whole series of different steps to make sure that we're following the letter of the law and our public trust responsibilities. So I think I'll leave it there.
Yeah, questions for Dr. Roman? I'm sure there will be more as time goes on. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity to share.
We'll move on to our third item from the Oregon Department of Ag Shellfish Program. Mr. Barcella.
Madam Chairman, Frank Barcellas with the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Task Force members appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to talk to you a little bit about our responsibility at the Oregon Department of Agriculture, where we are charged with maintaining these rules and regulations that allow us to participate in this national program. So my presentation is a little bit to help you understand where we fit into this as we look at the regulations that are placed upon us by different partners that we have with the federal government. But just a current industry overview that we have here, these are some of the aspects that we look at here. And again, the value of this industry is a great value to the state of Oregon, and we would like to encourage more of this on our part also as an agency to go forward with this task force and this initiative to see where we can develop a more vital and vibrant type industry in this state. We work under the National Shellfish Annotation Program requirements that they place upon us, as this is a federal and state cooperative program that helps us in our dealings that we have with this program, and we are in substantial compliance is what we seek to be with these programs at all times. And this program works in concert with the Interstate Shellfish Sanitation Conference for the sanitary control of shellfish in the states. So the NSSP is to promote this and to improve the sanitation of shellfish, particularly oysters, clams, mussels, and scallops. And this is an interstate commerce type situation with the federal state cooperation that we have here. So we are moving into the interstate commerce in this state, and in as many of the states do that operate a shellfish program, and because of that, that's where our responsibility is placed upon us with the federal government oversight that we see. Participants in this program include agencies from the shellfish producing and non-producing states, the FDA, EPA, NOAA, and the shellfish industry. And then the federal government has, through FDA, some international agreements that allow foreign nations to participate in this program also in the NSSP. Then the the International Shellfish Sanitation Conference was formed back in 1982. And again, it was a way for us to develop a program in the nation that has some sort of consistency and continuity that helps everyone in, regardless of what part of the nation you are in the shellfish industry, to feel like you're being treated equally and fairly across the board, and to help this industry to grow. To achieve this purpose, the ISSC did many things to help over these years to enhance this program. Adopting uniform procedures would certainly help us on the state side, gives the state shellfish programs the current and comprehensive sanitation guidelines that they need to be able to regulate this process, provides a forum for shellfish control agencies and the shellfish industry, the academic community, to resolve any major issues, and gives us an opportunity to inform all the interested parties of recent developments in shellfish sanitation and other major issues. And we had the opportunity just last month to be a part of this conference. It happens now every 2 years, and it's a forum for the states, the industry, and the government, federal government through FDA, to come together and to discuss the issues that we have, to vet them out as appropriately as can be done, and then to ask the delegates from the various states that are involved to vote on these proposed changes to the ISSC. So that will allow us to continue to grow and develop in such a manner that we meet all of the different changes that come about in this program and continue to have a vibrant developing program. The Interstate Shellfish Conference also promotes this cooperation and the trust of all of these agencies together, and it's a very well operated cooperative program that we have a part of, and we feel very much maybe you don't feel like we're a large part of the industry, but we definitely have the same voice that anyone else would be in this program to help in the governance of this program and to provide those opportunities for all of us here in the state of Oregon. Our relationship with this cooperative program is that as the Food Safety and Animal Health Program, we implement the National Shellfish Sanitation Program here in Oregon, and then we are audited by the federal government and the state program to make sure that we are performing this appropriately and that we are in compliance with the national program standards. That involves the fact that you will have shellfish specialists from the FDA come and do audits within our state. And they're looking to see that we are conducting this program in such a way that all of the program mechanisms are in place and that as a state we're not doing something out of compliance. And they come to look at our inspectors and what we are doing along the coast here in this aspect to help us develop a better program, but to keep us in line with everyone else that's in the country. So these regional shellfish specialists that they have on the FDA side are sent out to all of the participating states and look and audit those programs, and they're audited under the same guidelines. So it's a way to be uniform and regular in how we meet the requirements. We have four programs, areas that are regulated: the growing area classification and water quality compliance, which these rules are set again by the program and we enforce those rules; growing area patrol, performed by the Oregon State Police with our oversight; processing plant and shipper distributor inspections, and we have a laboratory that assists us in providing us with the information we need to know about what's actually happening out there in these growing areas and how we need to deal with situations that come up that are unusual or different, as we've seen here recently in some of the things that have occurred within the state. So again, we're one of those areas where there's a lot of different fingers that have these fingers are in the pie, but this is the pie that everybody has to share from, and we all have an opportunity to make sure that this works properly for us here in the state of Oregon. We also do some other things.
Sure. Do you notice any regulatory overlap with any other agencies? This is one of the things that I'm noticing more and more, that different agencies have different responsibilities, but there is a point of intersection. And when that occurs, it's very complicated for the regulated industry. They got Department of Ag showing up at 1 minute, ODF&W at another minute. Have you noticed working in the program where you guys have conflict with other agencies, either asserting jurisdiction in what you think are your issue areas or where you think you lack jurisdiction that others have?
Yes, that does come up. We hear those issues come up not only with us but in other states also. One of the things that this cooperative program was set up to deal was to try to limit some of that overlapping, because we do see that that does happen. We try to not overstep what our responsibilities and our boundaries are so that we can limit that kind. We would love to have a one-stop situation for everyone so that they don't have that.
I'd like to flag that, and I'm less concerned about torturing the bureaucrats with duplication as I am torturing the consumers.
I certainly understand that, yes. And that, again, with the way this program is set up, we have limited things we can do, but we are set up in such a basis with this cooperative program to make sure that the FDA oversees it, and we work under that guidance, and we try not to spread out other. But again, there's natural parts of this program that are there to naturally overlap to some degree. That's all that I have. Is there any questions that I can answer?
Mr. Sylvia. Mm-hmm.
So is the goals of like the NSSP and the ISSC to determine the quality and safety of the product when it goes to market, or is it determine it on the grounds? And is there a difference between those two?
There is a difference, but there is also it starts from the very while it's on the ground and goes through the whole process in this program.
Okay,
and so we have a comprehensive program all the way through that is overseen through this different type of oversight with FDA and those two programs. So these are cooperative programs that are developed to help the industry have input as well as the states and the federal government.
So the reason I'm raising this question just for the group to be thinking about as we go through this process is technologies such as depuration or where the product may be treated or cooked, you know, even though it may be, it originally may have a problem on the grounds. I don't know if those are issues or technologies that can address some of these challenges where we have closed grounds, for example.
What was the word you used?
Depuration.
What the hell does that mean?
What does that word mean? So it means where the shellfish will be held under controlled conditions, and they'll hold them under clean water. And the idea is to clean out any toxins or bacteria, and depending on the bacteria type of toxins, it may help in some cases, it may not in others. And I didn't know to what extent the industry is looking at depuration, particularly to address these areas that may be where you may not meet a standard, but after technological treatment, you could meet the standard. And I don't know what degree that's an issue or an opportunity.
Is that something that's done in the industry now?
Not
for Hample or Spain.
I believe there's one company in Washington that's using pasteurization on shucking. They're actually pressure shucking the oyster.
Right. Yeah, it's fresher under pressure.
Yeah. kind of where, and Alex, you correct me if I'm wrong, but where ISSC and that whole program steps in is at the point of harvest, more or less, from when we actually pull it out of the water. It's not so much the growing side of it.
The NSSP is the regulatory document, which the ISSC, a lot of acronyms,
right,
is the conference that develops
it. Informs
that. And so it is actually, as Frank was saying, this is a comprehensive document that is basically it provides for the growing area to meet the standards, so that means that the water quality should meet standards, all the way through where the shellfish are processed to the point where it's shipped it to a customer. So for Spain, the document provides regulation for when he can harvest, where he can harvest, and the way that they process that product. For me, it tells me, you know, what the standards are for water quality, how I'm to collect those, and how to, you know, provide reports, and it's just the whole program is there. And there are chapters on post-harvest processing, they call it, and, you know, what options there are for companies if maybe their water quality doesn't quite meet standards, but then if there are technologies available, then it does talk about, you know, you need to get a certain log reduction and pathogens. And so it is addressed there. And it hasn't really been utilized by the industry because it becomes more expensive.
Because of the cost.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's available.
A lot of growers aren't necessarily, a lot of that's, seems to me with the ISSC and that whole program, there's an East Coast and a West Coast factor. And a lot of the issues that are addressed that we fall under too are because of East Coast stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, our goal is really to start out with clean water to begin with, and then it's just easy for everyone down
there. It's the point I was making. It's the where we can farm and legally harvest is covered, but not the farming techniques themselves.
Right.
Is what I was going for there.
Mr. Hampton?
Didn't you allow relaying in closed areas before, you know, to be able, there's a, I don't know, I didn't use it, but I know that in some time you had, where you could take it out of a closed area, the oysters, put them into a certified area, and then there was a lot of time there before they were okay, before you could use them
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, that can be done. It's just, again, it's each time you move those oysters, you're just adding to the cost of producing them in the long run. So,
is that a common practice or not a common practice?
I'm not sure if it's common right now. Are you using that with Larry? Or
no one in the state is doing it currently.
Okay. So, okay.
But it would be, it can be done. It's just more handling. More handling is more cost.
Yeah, I didn't know whether this might link more to closed areas where you under the rules now you can't grow because of the pollution problems or effluent problems. But if those animals could be depurated or moved to clean water so that by the time they're brought to the market,
yeah,
they meet standards.
Yeah, I guess the answer to that would be it depends. And, you know, there are provisions that would allow for that. So it would just depend on where, you know, how badly impaired that water quality was that they were trying to come from, and then what the technology was that was being employed to reduce the pathogen load, and then we'd find out whether or not we can do it here or not.
So one of our researchers at the Astoria Lab did discover if you eat oysters and drink wine simultaneously, it reduces pathogen counts.
Far out.
Does vodka
count?
Yeah,
do you like that? It really works well with vodka. Martinis are fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there's studies on whether or not marijuana would have the same effect.
That's yet to be determined.
Yeah, that's future research.
Any other questions?
I have one question. I noticed your last slide, you kind of went over it quickly, but you noted that ODA also, of course, regulates the plat leases for oysters, which is a very important part of all the things we're talking about here. And one department that's not represented here, of course, is Department of State Lands, which manages the Oregon-owned estuaries here. And so there's this obvious interplay between your department and DSL, and I think we just need to at least recognize that and realize, maybe referring to the senator's question about is there overlap, there clearly is some handoffs that occur there in that management of those, of at least the state-owned portions of estuaries.
Correct, yes.
Thank you for flagging that. And we may want to entice one of the DSL staff to join us as an advisor on this committee. We can certainly look into that.
Yes, on that, I have a comment on a lot of stuff, don't I? But having dealt with ODA a lot and state lands, it was probably took me 3 years to realize that they were separate agencies, just because they did actually work together so well that from the outside and dealing with them both, I just assumed they were the same agency.
Okay, that's good. That's the way we like it.
That's very interesting, too. We yeah. sometimes see that as being two separate, very distinct places, but we hear that comment in a lot of
yeah,
people
Jim Johnson
that deal with us.
John yes. Byer, I just assumed they were ODA whenever I dealt with them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Well, we have exhausted our informational hearing portion. Now I'd like to turn to discussion of our task force objectives, our work plan, and where we want to be at the end of this. We have quite a bit of time to get our work done. We had, and Beth, would you like to join us up here? I know you're very well versed in how we roll out a schedule for a task force such as this, and I'd like to call on you to help us out a little bit as to where we go next. We have had discussion about a couple of field trips, and since the vast majority of us are coasties, about having a couple of meetings over on the coast to help educate ourselves on two different fronts, particularly that came to mind for me, because I would like to know more about them. And one is a visit to Whiskey Creek and to have an opportunity to learn a little bit more about that process and ocean acidification and how it impacts what's been happening over the last few years.
Be easy to do.
Yeah, so I would suggest a field trip to the coast starting at Whiskey Creek. And then if Ms. Petrino is amenable, we could actually set up a meeting over there of the task force and spend some time on the ground learning about the industry and learning about what challenges are faced in that aspect of it, and then hold a meeting there.
I think we ought to schedule lunch around that, too, so that we can have the full opportunity
I
to sample.
I think we should as well.
Good field research.
And I'd say if we're at Whiskey Creek, you know, Tillamook,
yeah.
Both Neatards and Tillamook have farms, so I don't know who hasn't been on an oyster farm here, but
well, I haven't been one up north, and I think it's important that we have a chance to look at maybe more than one.
I think too that,
and I'd also like to look at the implementation, Mr. Manderson, of the water quality testing program that's now been started up there with some money that came from the bill. So it might be a nice opportunity to see kind of what the objectives of that are and how it's working. So how would that be for meeting number one?
I would suggest if we're going to do oyster farm tours that we wait until the weather turns a little better.
Well, the other opportunity I was looking for was to spend some time in Newport and really get a good sense of what research is going on, how we can assist, what support that we have provided at this point is being helpful, what more needs to be done. So maybe that would be a good first meeting while the weather is still a little bit dicier.
One other thing, there's no point in reinventing the wheel. I'd like to hear from Washington about what's working well, what's not, and to get some kind of a budget, because if we build a superstructure around a $20 gazillion budget, it's not going to happen. So I'm perfectly amenable, and I don't want to speak for all of us, but I'm perfectly amenable to steal stuff from another state that's working well. And I'd love to get a rundown from them about what works, what doesn't, and how much does it cost?
And California as well has moved partway down the road, I believe, Cassina?
I believe so, yes. There was a presentation at the PCSGA meeting.
That's right.
On what they've done, specifically with their geoportal and the technology to kind of simplify permitting.
So maybe at our next meeting, we should defer the North Coast and move to the Mid-Coast, where we could maybe be indoors. And hosted by the university, perhaps, and invite Margaret or someone from the association to come give us an update on Washington and California.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Would it help to hear somebody from the industry in Washington? Because I know they might have their own unique spin on things that would be informative to us as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Shellfish Initiative, I think, is one thing, and then there's regulation side of it, of what's going on. Washington is in a mess right now. But.
Well, there may be things we don't want to borrow.
Well, yeah. Except that might also inform having a better program here. If they've got regulatory difficulties, that's important to hear.
I think that's one of the things I wanted to flag for us, is there's a big difference between state and federal when it comes to permitting. And Army Corps has a huge part of that.
Maybe if we could have a matrix of what some of the permitting, who are the agencies that are involved in it at the state and federal level, to just get a sense of what that matrix looks like.
A document that Dr. Moll put together, it was focused on aquaculture in general, but I think it had some really great flow charts and division of responsibilities for the whole permitting process. So some of that work's already been done, I think. Yes. It did a pretty good job.
Well, a lot of it's involved with even we deal with on the dredging side of the house. I mean, most of the players, except the FDA side of it, are the same, and it can be a nightmare.
The plat piece is also important, because there are some plats that are reserved and not work. There are some that are attempting to get weaseled into eelgrass area. There are how that all works would be of considerable interest to me, because I deal with it on the, as does Representative McCune, I deal with it on the constituent end with the phone calls that start them no good blankety blanks, and we go from there. And so I'd like to know who the real blankety blanks are.
And I think by our next meeting we'll have a better idea of that. We're just in the final stages of finishing the nationwide 48 permitting process in Oregon, which isn't really nationwide because each state does its own take on it. But the Oregon one is very nice compared to the other states.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Basically, Army Corps gets, and maybe somebody else has more take on this too, but they get input from the other federal agencies like NIMS and NOAA on what can and can't happen in different areas based on.
So would it be helpful to bring somebody from the Corps in to talk to us about this?
Yeah, Peter Moore is a good, he's worked for PCSJ on it. I've been part of that.
Peter might be a good place to start.
I think Peter would be a great resource to start on.
I'd prefer to hear about it rather than have the Corps here and go, how come you're so screwed up?
I will say this, the Portland district of the Corps compared to the Seattle district is night and day. They're actually pleasant to work with, and you know, things are science driven, and that's fine, but some districts have a personal side to it as well.
Then let's start with Mr. Moore and see if we can get an update on what's going on. Okay. And we can have an update on the Washington and California initiatives. PSCGA can do that as well, I'm sure. And we want a grower from Washington.
I would think if we want to hear how the
Probably want a coastal grower, not a Puget Sound grower.
Just right, it's
based
very
on,
different. Yeah. And then an update on what's going on at Oregon State for this particular meeting.
Yeah. Okay. We can do that for sure.
And anything else? I'm just trying to put together for Beth kind of some ideas about how we form this first, it sounds like, Newport meeting if we want to stay out of the bad weather for our
We just, with the way the tides work and how wonderful the weather is lately, you might not want to go for a boat ride.
Beth, you thought 6 to 8 weeks potentially?
Madam Chair, that's what we...
As an interval?
That's what we talked about.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that sound amenable to folks?
Sure.
So if we did something in January... Mm-hmm. And I'll have Beth reach out and work on schedules, and if we could have a, how long, I'll let you two work together on the timing of kind of what we need to get started.
Okay, give me a call and we'll work out it. Okay.
And do we want someone from we don't have a DSL representative on this task force, do we want somebody from DSL to be a part of this conversation at this first meeting?
I'd call them in as needed. All of the agencies are so stressed right now, I just don't think they need people just sitting here listening to us chit-chat. I'd call them in for the DSL specific stuff.
Yeah, when we get into actual platting and that type of stuff, that'd probably be good.
So Beth, does that sound like a framework that's enough for you to get started on a January meeting?
Yeah, I do.
Did you have Alex?
I was just wondering whether or not the industry could maybe in the meantime get together with some of the buddies and see what are the issues out of the industry would really like.
That'd be really helpful. Mm-hmm.
I think that's another one where Peter Moore would be great, because he tends to be the guy in Oregon that handles a lot of the permitting for all the growers.
Anything that would be appropriate at this particular meeting to address? Anything else out there that anybody wants to flag for this one? And we're not, you know, cut in stone at 4:45 today. If something comes to mind when you're driving home and you think about it, Beth will be the point of contact. So shoot anything you want to add to her. And we'll go from there.
Cool.
All right. Anything else for the good of the order?
Cassina, are you still on the clock for the Coastal Caucus? Or
You missed that.
The governor's office
has stolen her.
We brought her over for a policy fellowship through the legislative session.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So she's going to stay with us through this task force at the end of the short session, and she's now on Gabriella's clock.
Cool.
Which is good.
I thought of one thing that would be interesting, since we're sort of sourcing folks to gather information for us, and recently the DLCD has compiled a new mapping of Oregon estuaries in terms of habitat mapping using the both current data as well as the new habitat classification that's being used. It's basically the standard across the country. Mm-hmm. And it would be very good, I think, for us to begin to compile sets of information that include this new habitat mapping with the plat maps, since we now have GIS, and I'm sure a lot of folks can do this kind of work.
Yeah.
So we actually have a good picture of where industry is currently working, what sort of habitats are happening there. I think it would just provide us this map that we can see, and it will give us a good visual in terms of where we can go from here.
So would you like to have the maps provided, or would you like somebody that actually does this mapping to come and educate us about how it's done? What is your pleasure there?
Well, I'm glad you didn't ask me to do it. First off, I think we should certainly just...
What would be helpful?
I think it'd be great to have the maps provided, and again, this information is already available within the state, both these DLCD as well as, I think, the ODA who would have the plat, so we should have at least compiled. I don't think we need much more presentation than that necessarily.
Okay. And then let's, for a second meeting, 6 to 8 weeks beyond, will be after the short session, then we'll head a little bit farther north. And then we'll plan the others after that. Okay?
Sounds good.
And I guess if you need help with DCSGA getting someone here or Peter, just let me know and I can put some pressure on him.
He's been very helpful.
Yeah.
Anything else? Beth, are you?
I'm good.
Got what you need?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, on that note, then, we are adjourned. Well, on that note, then, we are adjourned.